Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Leading Ideas Talks is also brought to you by Protect, Sustain, Grow, best practices for handling your church's money. Whether it's your first time dealing with church finances or you've been handling them for years, this video toolkit will help you provide financial integrity and sustainability for your church, plus expand your church's income. Learn more and watch an introductory video at churchleadership.com/shop. Your church may have more resources than you think. In this episode, Jackie Jones-Smith explains how Christ Church in St. Petersburg, Florida, a church once slated for closure, turned itself around by embracing a more entrepreneurial mindset and taking stock of its physical and human assets.
I'm Ann Michael. I'm the Associate Director of the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary, and I'm your host for this episode of Leading Ideas Talks. Our guest today is Reverend Jacqueline Jones-Smith, who's an ordained elder in the Baltimore-Washington Conference of the United Methodist Church, but is currently serving as pastor of Christ United Methodist Church in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's a church that was in need of a turnaround when she arrived in 2016, and Jackie was instrumental in helping that church broker a real estate sale that's given it a new lease on life. So we've invited to talk with us about that today. So thank you, Jackie, for agreeing to share with me and our listeners today.
Thank you, Ann. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so to set the stage for the conversation, can you briefly describe the situation at Christ UMC when you first arrived?
Well, let me say beforehand that I didn't intend to work in a church. We were just visiting there looking for a church home, and they evidently needed a pastor because their current pastor was about to leave. And so they said, we've been praying for you. So anyway, that was a surprise. Christ Church St. Pete was then a 127-year-old church, well known for a daycare. It had started, it's in downtown St. Petersburg, well known for its music ministry, its mission outreach. Many elders and a couple of bishops, I believe, came out of that church. And it started a number of churches in the suburbs. Unfortunately, since, as most mainline churches, since the 1970s, there was marked decline, of course, in membership. This church had worshiped over 1,000 people a week. It has a 1,200-seat sanctuary. By 2009, the church had less than 100 worshipers, and at that point had been drawing on its endowment of about $2 million. And by 2002, it started to draw down on the excess of its endowment of about $2 million. In 2009, it began to withdraw from the corpus. So, but it got rid of a full, by 2013, it went from a full-time to part-time pastors. And I guess by the time I had gotten there, for 3 years, it had maybe five pastors in 2.5 years, five part-time pastors. So when I got there, it was, from what I understand, on a list of potential churches that needed to be closed. And prayed about it, went in, and the church needed a lot of help. So that's kind of where it was. It was at a point that it was drawing on the corpus of its endowment, had about $500,000 left in that endowment, had been through several pastors in the last few years. And by the time I walked in fact, the first question that was asked me by many of the people was, how long are you going to be here?
So that's, I think the question I have is, why did you decide to go?
You know, when someone looked at me, when we went to that service, someone, and that was a former retired pastor, looked at me and said, we've been praying for you. And we prayed about it. And my husband said, I think God's calling you back into the parish. So it was purely God's call.
Mm-hmm. Well, things have changed since you've been there. And yes. I wondered if you could say a bit about what happened after you assumed the pastor of the church.
Well, once I got in there, my business background and my legal background, all of our backgrounds come to bear when we go into pastoral ministry. And when I went in, I immediately, this is a church that had not done some serious looking at its finances. I asked, one of the conditions of my coming in was that the church have the conference do an outside audit of the finances. I came in, looked very seriously at that, and immediately, I guess within the first 60 days, we were able to cut down on some of that endowment draw from just based on pure spending. Mm-hmm. By the time, that was July of 2016, by the time we had our first charge conference in October, I had made a decision that we really needed to leverage the assets of this church. We needed to get some money in, or else the church was not going to make it. And so it was important that we set the tone for this church. And I actually went in developing, I'm a firm believer that when you go into a church, you do some important branding and you get people to come on board with the theme. And so I preached my first sermon from Isaiah 43, that God was about to do a new thing. And I used a rubber band as imagery. And I said, our theme was letting God stretch us as stakeholders in this community, that we had to stretch. It was going to cause tension. We're going to have to do some things we're not used to, but let's do that. So my 2017 priority was to leverage those assets. And so we did I just looked around very seriously. What did we have? The church had a 2/3 acre lot across the street that it was using for parking, not a lot of parking, but it was used. The church also is a building that occupies 50,000 square feet of space, which is amazing space, a sanctuary that holds 1,200 people. We're in the midst of downtown. We're right next door to City Hall. There's an alley between the church and City Hall. And yet the church didn't have relationships with City Hall, didn't have many relationships outside. And so the first thing we did was identify first the tangible assets, which included the property, our building. Then we looked at our endowment, what restricted and unrestricted funds we had. But then the important thing also was looking at the intangible assets. Who were the people in the church that who had untapped skills and abilities that the church never used, and who were potential partners and relationships that we needed. And so at that point, I knew my trustees would not be an organization that could help sell the lot. At that point, we also looked around at the economics, the economic environment of the city. And it was clear that development was happening downtown. And property, this lot that was purchased, I think maybe in the 1950s, was potentially worth a lot of money at this point. So I formed a task force, a business development task force. And the purpose of the task force was to develop close working relationships with the St. Petersburg government, the chamber, other businesses and community groups, and explore and investigate business opportunities that could generate revenue for our church. And the makeup of this business development group, they included people in the congregation that had, as I said, they were in intangible assets, untapped skills and abilities. Good example, one of the retired pastors was had one of the largest CPA firms in the city. He just got a call to ministry late in life. One of the members of the church was a former county commissioner. and vice mayor of the city of St. Petersburg, and the church never tapped his ability. So on this task force, I had a retired banker in our church who dealt in commercial banking. I had this former county commissioner, the head of this CPA firm, and the head of this business development task force was, which was unusual, was my husband. In the past, he had always been a silent partner, but my husband, he's never held any position in the church, but I made him chair of this group because he's a nationally renowned entrepreneur and business exec who had been on several boards, corporate boards, FedEx, Caterpillar. And so I made him the chair of the group. The group was non-decision-making. It was a
so they were just advising. They were just
advising. They reported to me. They were a non-decision-making information gathering and analysis group that was to make recommendations to the trustees.
So to cut to the quick, what did they learn?
Well, they learned that certainly that the church's lot was in a highly desirable, high density development area. There was a shortage of rentable space in downtown St. Pete. High level of interest of nonprofits in renting space in Christ Church, which mm-hmm. is downtown, and we're at the corner where there's a bus stop. So we saw this, the business development task force saw two areas of revenue. One was renting our building, and the second was selling the lot. We went for the first, we sold the lot first because we needed revenue to work on the building so that we can eventually sell, we can eventually rent out the space. So anyway, they recommended it. We found a partner, a commercial real estate firm to work with us. And we made recommendations to the trustees. Of course, they accepted it. And so on December 13th of 2019, we sold the lot for $5.3 million.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to give us that number.
Two-thirds of an acre.
Number, yeah.
Two-thirds of an acre. Two-thirds of an acre for $5.3 million. That's how valuable it is. But the unique thing we did with this, in our deal, we required easements for parking spaces, about 100 parking spaces in the new structure, in perpetuity, because if we're a downtown church, we've got to have parking. So part of the deal was to have those easements for parking in perpetuity. The great thing about that is totally, when you count the easements, the deal is valued at about $6.3 million and is considered one of the at that point, one of the highest per acre sales in downtown St. Pete. And some other churches have actually copied that business model.
So I have a question, which is, if the church was sitting with an asset that was worth so much money and had the talent within its congregation to really think about how that could be exploited, I guess I'm wondering, why didn't they think of it before?
And that's an interesting question. Let me say this. In my experience, I've found a couple of things. I've found churches generally don't like to sell property. That's the first thing. They don't like to sell, they don't like to I don't call it selling, but leveraging assets, because we still ended up, we're going to end up with more parking. So churches don't like to sell property. I think the other thing is a lot of times churches look at what I call the church jobs. They don't look at people's other life, the secular life that people have in terms of skills and abilities. And so that I've found has been pretty standard in the churches that I've served. And my business experience and my experience managing companies, you know, you always look at what the value of what people bring to the table. And so they were surprised. In fact, a number of people at first were very concerned about the idea of selling the property because the church bought it so many years ago and it was so important. And let me tell you, it was a weeded out. It was a lot. There were some spaces, but it was kind of, it had a section with some overgrown weeds. They wanted to start an urban garden, which in and of itself would have been fine, but the church desperately needed an infusion of cash. So,
right. So I, as you've been talking, I've been thinking about what some of the obstacles are. I mean, you've talked about that attitude that they, you know, a church never wants to let go of something that they see as part of their commonwealth, I guess.
And, yes.
You know, you talked about the fact that your existing trustees structure probably didn't have the capacity to take on a project like this. So you had to create a separate task force. But were there other obstacles that you needed to overcome to get the congregation to start to think in this way?
Well, they also, a couple of things. The other thing is with my trustees, if you know most church committees, my husband always said, God so loved the world that God didn't send a committee to create it. trustees meet on a monthly basis. They take minutes. I needed a group that could act quickly. Mm-hmm. Task forces have a tendency. They meet when necessary. They communicate constantly. They don't worry about minutes and Robert's rules. They get to the heart of the matter. We needed to do this quickly. And I think my trustees would have taken a while, and many of them did not have the expertise. So that was that was one barrier. I think the other barrier with Christ Church, it had been in such a preservation mode, and there was a lot of paranoia and concern that the conference was going to close them, that they did not have good relationships with the conference either. And so we had to reestablish some good relationships with the conference. It really took a lot of discussion with members. It took a lot of convincing that yes, we're not trying to harm the church. We really need to get some money. The other thing I think that we had to do was to educate the congregation. Many people did not know, and many, if my experience in churches is that many in our churches don't know the real financial state of the church. They give their offering. The church just kind of sits there and runs. And many people believe the church is going to be there forever. We did a series of important educational things with the leadership and with the members, PowerPoints, et cetera, explaining our financial condition, that folks, our weekly offerings do not they do not fund the budget, that we have to draw down on endowment, and we used a lot of simple examples. You know, if you make a certain amount every week and you are paid on a weekly basis and you spend more than that, you're going to have to go into your savings account.
Right.
So we, you know, it took some time, some discussion. And also, let me say this, because so many pastors had come and gone just before I got there, the longer I was there, you gain some credibility. I accepted a part-time appointment, but I didn't come in as a part-time pastor, because to do a turnaround, you have to make a commitment, and it takes a lot of time. So besides the convincing and the education, over time, many of the members started to see that I was very serious about wanting the church to survive. And so, you know, all of this is kind of working together. also getting my leadership to have meetings. We had, I had a new district superintendent that came in, I guess, when I came in. So we had an opportunity to educate her. She was a great thinker. She's good at out of the box thinking. And so she liked the ideas. We presented it to the conference so they could understand, no, this church is not trying to, you know, pull a fast one. This is where we were going. So we were gathering support from within the conference, within the community for this. We joined the Chamber of Commerce. The church did, the local Chamber of Commerce. So we tried to do a lot of things to build relationships within the church and outside the church.
Yeah, so I would imagine that you see this infusion of a rather significant amount of money as the starting point of some new opportunities for the church. But I also think that there would be a lot of churches that are in the situation that you described that this church was in that would say, oh, phew, now we've got money in the bank and would be happy to just to go on as they've always gone on. And so this obviously has given rise to a new vision for how your congregation can be in ministry. And I wondered if you can describe how you plan to use these assets to develop the ministry.
Well, the first thing we did when I created the goal of we needed to leverage assets, it became part of an overall Christ Church Vision 2020. Interesting, mm-hmm. Now we're in 2020, of what we needed to do in terms of expanding some of our programs, et cetera. Let me just say this. One of the we closed, and this is by the grace of God, we closed on December 13th in 2019.
You closed on the real estate deal.
Yeah. And thank God, our deal had a requirement that we get our money up front, because you know what happened in March of 2020. COVID happened.
Right.
And so thank God we've had some funds, and we were able that allowed us to quickly pivot and do mm-hmm. some things like, have the equipment to do virtual worship, et cetera, because really there had been no money. But one mm-hmm. of the things that we are looking at doing is, expanding some of our current outreach ministries. The church has a unique ministry called Laundry Ministry. Believe it or not, we go to laundromats in some of the more economically challenged areas. And before COVID, our folks would go in and just pay for laundry for people. And that's expensive. If you've ever didn't have a washing machine and you went to the laundry, the difference between paying for your laundry and buying diapers or formula, it's a big deal. And so that was a big ministry in our church. We've now restructured it and we're doing it under COVID. We're providing bags, safe distancing and masks and things like that. But one of the goals of Vision 2020 was to expand that further throughout the city. We mm-hmm. also had the church in its history had an after school for the arts program. We were, the plan is to bring that back. Just a number of outreach things that we were going to do. In addition, on the other side, we hadn't finished the business development. Some of the funds we wanted to use, haven't done that yet. Some of the funds we wanted to use was to upgrade our current facility so that we could rent it. As I said, we have a 1,200 seat sanctuary. We are, our Christ Church's sanctuary is bigger than many of the performance venues in St. Petersburg. And so part of our goal, and that's been stopped now because of COVID, because many of these places are not open. Part of our goal was to become, say, the less expensive avenue for partner with one of the performance venues and say if they had a nonprofit or a school that wanted to do a graduation, we would become the, say, the B venue, less expensive venue. So we have a number of, the business development plan is still active. We just, in terms of redoing our space, using it. We are a small church in a big building, renting out to nonprofits. Much of that now has been put on hold because of COVID, unfortunately.
Do you get pushback in your church when you use the word business?
No. Okay. Did it first. Let me just say that, because many of the folks, many folks don't believe that the church is a business. And yeah. One of the things I do believe that I tell people, and is that the church is a business. We're in the business of making disciples for Jesus Christ, but we are a business. We are under state laws. We are a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. And you know yourself, Anne, from your research and experience, if churches don't pay payroll taxes, if churches do not, if churches are subject to taxes, then, you know, the IRS is going to get to you. So the government treats you as a corporation. Also, the church, we don't want to admit this, but the church is evaluated and measured by decision-making structures that use business metrics. For example, the number of members that you have, the number of people that you worship, are you paying your apportionments? In fact, those are some of the things that some of the reasons that conferences decide to close churches. And so let's be real.
Right. The church is not immune from the laws of economics as much as
it's not immune from the laws of economics, right. Nor is it immune from what I call accountability to higher corporate structures. Because, as you know, within our United Methodist Church, churches are evaluated by metrics and they are numbers. Period. Yeah. So the church is a business. That took a while of explaining that and talking about it, but I think our congregation understands that, I think, a little more than most. They just didn't want to see it that way because they were concerned about being closed.
Yeah. So I'm so glad that you introduced the concept of leveraging assets. Lovett and I have a new book coming out in a couple of months. It's on stewardship and finance, but we devoted one of the major sections of this book to how congregations can rethink their economic reality by taking stock of their financial assets. And we give a lot of emphasis to thinking about physical assets. But, you know, I also know that not every congregation is situated in such a prime location where their land is so very valuable. But I do still think there are ways that every congregation can start to take stock of its resources. So, how would you recommend that a church begin the process?
I think you have to have some objective people. First, look at your physical build. Look at what you own, your physical building. What do you own? You own your building. You may own some vehicles. You may, you know, look at what I call real property. Look at your real property. The second thing, and I alluded to it earlier, the second thing you have to look at is, what are your intangible assets? You know, don't just look at your gift surveys of, you know, you've got singers, et cetera. Get to know, maybe it requires doing another kind of survey. Get to know your congregation. Who are the people in your congregation? You may have some intangible assets in that congregation, such as, you know, attorneys, teachers, political figures. You know, what are your intangibles that you have? The other part of your asset base includes, from a business standpoint, your goodwill. How are you perceived in the community? What are the things that people know? If you've been there a while. What do people know about you? What is, you know, in terms of your reputation? Good example at Christ Church, even though the church had over time had diminished in membership, its daycare, its CDC or Child Development Center, which was formed, you know, over 20 years ago, has an incredible reputation. So many people downtown, including people at City Hall, had their children in this CDC, in the Child Development Center, and yet there were no relationships. So who are your neighbors? Who are the people in the community? What's your reputation? And then you can try to build on that. You know, those become assets that you can leverage, not necessarily selling, but you can leverage those relationships. Who in the community can you team with? Are there organizations you can team up with, nonprofits such as the Boys and Girls Club? Good example. I told you restarting our After School for the Arts program. Well, one of the things that I think when we restart, we want to look at teaming with, say, the Boys and Girls Clubs or the YMCA, because they do have an after school program every day of the week, 5 days a week. We may want to just do part of that, or one day, one afternoon for the arts program. So though, you know, you get
looking for new partners as well.
You have to look for new partners, because that helps. Those are extra hands, extra people, possibly extra resources. So when I say leveraging assets, it's not just what are the four corners of the building around you, but all and what you own and the people in your church, but also who are the people in the community? Who are the organizations? Who can you team with? What are other, are there other churches? You know, just a number of things. So that's what I mean by leveraging assets.
Yeah. And so I've heard you speak about this before in terms of thinking outside the box. And I think you've just given a whole list of examples in which it's coming at things and situations, coming at your context with a different angle of vision, so that you can think outside the box about what possibilities are. Jackie, this is a tremendous story, and I'm just so admiring of what you've been able to accomplish at this church. I know it's going to be an inspiration to lots of our listeners and lots of people who hear about this, to think about how they may be able to think differently and do things differently in their congregations as well. So I'm just so grateful that you've been willing to share from your experience, not only in terms of the strategies that you recommend, but also I think the inspiration of the example of what you've been able to accomplish. So thank you so much, Jackie, for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
On the next Leading Ideas Talks, we speak with Scott Cormode about recalibrating the church to innovate for a changing world, plus his new book, The Innovative Church.
The church as we know it is calibrated for a world that no longer exists. We have designed church so that we want to accomplish things, to solve problems for a world that is no longer the way that we think it is. And so we're going to have to respond with innovation. But one of the basic understandings, premise of the idea of innovation, is that we need to abandon the past. They call it burning the boats. The problem with that, of course, is that we will never abandon the past. We will never stop reading 2 Corinthians. We're never going to stop saying Jesus is Lord. We're never going to stop loving our neighbor as ourselves. So that creates for us a really interesting problem. How do we maintain a rock-solid commitment to the unchanging Christian gospel, while at the same time create an innovative or entrepreneurial spirit for how to present that gospel to an ever-changing culture? In other words, an unchanging gospel for an ever-changing culture.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to our weekly newsletter, Leading Ideas, at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.